I know that some in our audience know the finer points of hockey.
The Chris Johnston Show.
We are your friends.
The biggest stories, bringing you inside the game.
What did you hear?
The Chris Johnston Show.
What is going on?
Here's Chris with your host, Julia McKenzie.
Coming at you on a Tuesday for the Chris Johnston Show. Yes, we were not able to do a show on Monday. Some scheduling stuff kind of got in the way. But we're coming at you on Tuesday, and we'll be back also on Thursday with a regular show. CJ, how are you doing, man? It was a little bit jarring to kind of have the missed day on the Monday. But I know you had some personal things you had to deal with on the Monday.
Yeah, I was actually at a funeral yesterday. And I must say, obviously, it's a sad event. It's the end of a life and a difficult time for a family. But what a funeral in terms of just making me think, if you can have the sort of life where people are talking about you that way at the end of it, you know, you've done something right. And so it was for a man named Ross Quigley. He's a legend in my hometown of Cobourg, Ontario, born and raised there. He actually was one of the founders of the Cobourg and District Sports Hall of Fame. And so someone who was heavily involved in hockey and baseball in our community. And this is how cool it was. Every flag in Cobourg yesterday was at half mast for him. I mean, the whole town. And I know it's not a big town, but it's still like it's a pretty significant thing. And, you know, the guy who conducted the ceremony was probably a 2-hour ceremony, which is longer celebration of life, really more than a traditional funeral, I would say. But, you know, Ross's son, Rory, is an arborist. And I love the way he ended the ceremony. He said something to the effect of, "A mighty oak has fallen in Cobourg, and the reverberations will be felt for miles around." And just thought it was really, really touching. So Ross was a great man. He lived 2 doors down from my dad the last couple of years, someone I got to know well, got to spend some time with him actually here. And he knew it was his last days for the last few months that he was coming to the end of his life and was really at peace and approached that with a lot of courage. And so I was pleased to be able to be down there and spend time with my dad. And that's why we put this off a day, but it was well worth it. And, just a life well lived.
Absolutely. My condolences, to Mr. Quigley. He seemed like a very, very important man to the Cobourg community and well worth celebrating his life. I like the idea of funerals being celebrations of life and not just being these super sad, moments, I guess. I mean, I'm used to my family treating those funerals as stuff like that. So, I'm happy that you were able to be around your family and you were able to celebrate this man's life. Obviously he's gone to the other side now, but I'm happy you were able to be there in that moment.
Yeah, it was great.
Yeah. So we have some hockey we have to talk about. Pretty jam-packed show. Just because it's a Tuesday doesn't mean we're not going to get to ask CJ. We have some questions, of course. But we have to talk about the Canucks. We're going to mention the Olympics. And Anton Khudobin, once upon a time, a legend for the Dallas Stars and helping them get to the Stanley Cup final during the bubble. I would like to start with the Canucks and the fact that they are they're perfect under Bruce Boudreau, in spite of all the front office turnover that's taken place over the last little while. And I was trying to find it on our episode we did in Montreal, but I remember you kind of casually mentioned Jim Rutherford wanting back in the game. And lo and behold, he's running things in Vancouver now. Foresight. Did you have any inkling he was going to Vancouver?
I certainly knew of their interest in him. I think when we recorded that episode would be, 8 days ago. It just wasn't clear. You know, that was after the weekend where, you know, they let Travis Green go and Jim Benning, a couple others from the organization. It wasn't clear at that point early last week if he was going to accept the job. And I think what's interesting here is initially my understanding is Jim Rutherford actually, you know, said he was sick last week. He wasn't sure. If you know, he didn't want to just jump into this, you know, at his stage of life, I think he wasn't sure where or when, if he would work again. And, Francesco Aquilini, the Canucks, chairman, you know, kind of the front facing member of the Aquilini family that owns that team, went and visited him in person. And that helped sort of seal the deal, because, you know, Aquilini had really wanted Jim Rutherford to run his hockey department. They actually have a relationship pre-existing, you know, prior to this time, just they've both been around the sport a while, and Rutherford is one of the people Aquilini's been leaning on in the last few months when he's been contemplating changes, trying to seek some outside opinions on his team and what's going on and the best way forward. And so, you know, it all ended up working out. It just took a couple extra days for Jim Rutherford to be, you know, convinced, committed, and certainly he's all those things. And I actually think it's the perfect hire for that team right now. I mean, I know that we can go into, sure, he's been around a long time and all this stuff, new voices and this and that. But when you're talking about someone who can provide a buffer between ownership and the eventual GM and the front office, someone who's seen it all, and someone who I think still into his early 70s really wants to work. And so there's just not that many people out there that have anywhere. Well, there's no one out there that has his resume that would be willing to work right now. And so I think this is a great hire for the Canucks. Sounds like Jim Rutherford's actually, I talked to Aquilini last weekend. I was in Florida for the Board of Governors, and you know, he sort of set the expectation there that GM search would probably stretch into the off season. You know, it seems like Jim Rutherford's maybe a little more anxious to try to fill that position sooner. And so, you know, he'll be dealing with maybe some limited candidate fields because the year's on and some people are under contract, but you know, it sounds like he wants to build out that front office really quickly here.
Yeah, because a lot of names to add to that as well have also been let go in the last few days too. Chris Gear, the former AGM, gone, and the former senior director of hockey operations, Jonathan Wall, also dismissed in the last few days. So we're not just talking a new GM here. We're talking a good chunk of their front office staff. Any idea of any names who could be tossed out around? Or,
well, you know, Jim Rutherford at his introductory press conference Monday mentioned that he'd like to bring someone in this week. I believe that to be Patrick Alvin, who he worked with in Pittsburgh. If you remember, actually, when Jim stepped aside from the Penguins for a time, Alvin was the interim GM. It's not clear yet if that's going to happen, but that's the name I've heard that he would bring in to potentially fill one of the assistant GM roles. But you're right, he's building out a front office. It's not just a GM. You know, I would expect there could be another assistant GM beyond that. You know, we know the Sedins are involved there. You know, I think that this all has to be sculpted and made in a certain way. But again, I think that's why someone like Rutherford is perfect. Like I think giving him that blank canvas is the smart way to go if you're ownership. And you know, this is a really compelling organization to me because they haven't hit rock bottom. Like the start of the season was a disaster, but you look at the roster and they got players. You know, this isn't necessarily a full teardown type of situation. And, you know, one thing that Rutherford's always been good at is shaking things up and, you know, being pretty aggressive trade wise and turning things over. And so I mean, I think I got them as a team to watch now, and it's unrelated to them winning four straight games right out of the chute with Bruce Boudreau as their head coach. I just think that team's probably quite a bit better than it's looked. And then the question now is how much better, you know, I mean, how, and can they even get back in the playoff race? Like the math is not on their side there, but crazy things have happened. I mean, we saw the Blues a few years ago, and I'm not saying they're going to go win the cup, but the Blues came from last place in NHL at this point in the season and made the playoffs. I mean, it's not impossible if they get hot. And so, you know, it probably took a little longer than it should have maybe to clean house there. But I like the way that the Aquilinis have started this. And I think they've put these big decisions in the right person's hands.
Yeah, I was going to touch off on the fact that Bruce Boudreau has his team winners of four straight. And there was like one funny clip I saw over the weekend where I forget which player on the Canucks was like walking through the tunnel and he starts saying, "Bruce, there it is." And Bruce Boudreau is just completely annoyed. He's so annoyed at it. But it seems like I don't know what your insights are on it, but it seems like they're a bit of a different team. They are getting that, you know, new coach bump and they're getting some wins together.
Right. And they're starting to feel confidence, right? I mean, the beauty about winning four games in a row and, you know, one of those wins wasn't that pretty. Not that we're grading wins at this point in time, given where the season's gone. But, you know, I just think that it's loosened everyone up. And if there's one thing Bruce Boudreau is known for, it's, you know, getting players, I think, to a comfortable spot. I think he really understands the mindset of a player, you know, having been a skilled player himself back, you know, in his days. You know, I think that he's a good confidence builder for his team. I don't think he's as hard on them maybe as maybe a tough way to say it. I'm, you know, I'm not saying he gets walked all over by the players either, but I think you can find a nice line there for confidence. And I mean, that team had to be missing. I mean, they underperformed by such a wide margin for 20 games. I don't think it's because Travis Green's a bad coach per se either. Like I expect Travis will find another job and I expect him to do a good job. I think he did a good job in Vancouver for most of the time, but maybe it just had run its course this year because the team wasn't responding to him and it wasn't going well. But I think Bruce is the kind of guy to bring in on a short-term basis to see what you have there. And so I like the mix. You know, what's interesting too is that Francesco Aquilini, you know, mentioned to me that when we talked in Florida that he actually ran it by Jim Rutherford before, you know, he knew if Rutherford was going to take the job, like, would you be okay if I hired Boudreau? So he had already had the blessing because, you know, usually you want to do these things in reverse order, but it's a little tough when you're in the middle of the season, making the changes, you have games to play and all those types of things to deal with.
That's really interesting. So it seems as if he had Jim Rutherford in the crosshairs for quite some time. I also wonder if he gave you any insight on why it took as long as it did to make some of the changes that he did. Because remember, a lot of these Canucks fans were starving for changes to be made in the front office and coaching.
Well, I'd say it this way. He was trying to delay it in case there was a turnaround. Like, I think he believed the team was better than it was showing. But you know, I think he wanted to be fair to everyone. And so like, it's really easy on the outside. And look, this is our job, essentially, Julian, to second guess decisions like this. But I think it's easy to just be like, oh, he should have done this and this and that. I mean, he had to line up his ducks too, in terms of figuring out who to hire, you know, convincing in this case, I think Jim Rutherford, or making Jim Rutherford comfortable with the opportunity that was on the table. And so I think that explains why it got to the point it was, but you know, he did recognize that, you know, he recognized it was time finally, you know, the early December. And so maybe it was a little late, but, you know, as they say, the best time to plant a tree was 20 years ago and the second best time is right now. So, you know, eventually he got to where right now came around. And I think that you know, as I say, I give him credit for how he's brought this together. And I think he's put his organization quickly in a spot now where it can start to thrive.
What was that analogy about planting trees? The best time to plant trees was 20 years ago?
Yeah, I
Who
think
came
it's
up with that.
I think it might be like a Chinese sort of something from history. The idea is like, you can always look back and say, I should have invested in this stock whenever, like, but the second best time to act is now, once you see the path forward. And I like that. I like that idea.
Telling you again, guys, we need to come up with a segment where CJ just drops some kind of insightful quote. I want to call an audible. There's one story that dropped on Monday. Actually, that came from...
There are no audibles, because I never know what you're going to say on here. So, I mean, this is unscripted, my friend.
I was trying to, you know, at least have the mystique that there would be audibles, but that is very true.
The mystique that we have a plan, or...
plans. Well, you can only do so much. My colleagues at The Athletic, Arpin Basu, good friend of both of ours, and Marc-Antoine Godin. I don't know if you've met Marc-Antoine, but he's also...
Oh, tons. Too. Oh, yeah. Oh, this is a small industry, my friend.
Of course. I've been reading Marc-Antoine since high school. Like, that's how revered he is, and that's also how old he is, I guess. They had their Canadiens notebook, and arguably the most intriguing piece that came out of their notebook on Monday, with regards to the Montreal Canadiens GM search, is the fact that there are three female candidates on the long list for this job. I was very surprised to see that there were that many names. There's already one name I could already guess is probably among those three. Is Emily
Gaston? You've mentioned her here previously.
Yes, of course. I'm just curious who the other two names might be.
I can't guess. I mean, I don't want to throw names out there because I don't know. But it's a good sign. You know, you got to start somewhere with this stuff, right? You have to, you know, give people a chance to interview, to get that experience, to be considered. And ultimately, someone's going to be hired. I mean, we have female executives at that level in baseball already. You know, I think it really is going to happen sooner rather than later. And I actually think the Canadians make a lot of sense because, you know, I believe we discussed this in Montreal, but just because they're kind of doing things a little differently than other teams do anyway, with the whole language issue, which I know we've beaten around a lot. Mm-hmm. You know, I think that they're in a position where it makes sense to try someone different. And look, they've got a ton of experience too with Jeff Gordon. You know, what's wrong with some on the job training? You know, titles are just titles. Titles usually dictate how much you get paid, right? It's like how you compare yourself to other people in the league. But the truth is most front offices are big enough now that there's a lot of collaboration that goes on day to day with decisions. You know, ultimately it comes down to one person who has a final say. And I think in this case, it's going to be Jeff Gorton, no matter who the next GM is, no matter what they say publicly. That's what I believe. I don't think you're getting him in the position.
You're thinking that.
Right. But I'm saying you're not getting him in the position he took. If he doesn't have that degree of power, I mean, he had that degree of power at the New York Rangers and he would have that somewhere else. And so, I was encouraged to see that report from Marc-Antoine and Arpin, and I'll work on finding you some other names before we do this again in 48 hours on Thursday, but I don't know who it is, but I think it's a great start.
What will be found out first? The three names
don't
on
do it.
The list?
Jeff Carter's middle name? <'Cause> I was having lunch with my dad yesterday. He's like, have you found out Jeff Carter's middle name yet? And I was like, I haven't.
Oh,
just
no.
Leave me alone, man.
Sorry. I did not expect you to come up with that, but you're right. I was going to ask you about Jeff Carter's middle name.
I said that that'll be a Christmas gift for the listeners. I'll have to get that before our final December 25th episode.
Oh, man. Christmas time. I can't wait for Christmas now. Not even just for like the break and stuff, but just being able to hang around with family and just
have you been buying any presents yet or what?
I have one part of my room right now is just Amazon boxes of all the gifts I've been buying for my family and some friends.
Man, it's early, bud. It's December 14th. What are you so?
Here's the thing, man. I'm a busy person and I know that if I leave it to the last second, I'm just going to be scrambling and it's not going to go well. Not to mention, I think one of the gifts is for a Secret Santa event I'm going to this coming weekend. So I needed to get at least one of the gifts up now. So yeah, I try to get that done like out the way as soon as I can. Because I do not want to be caught at like, I don't know, Toys R Us or something, you know, like December 23rd, trying to figure out what to get my cousin. No, I do not want that.
Dude, that's me every year. Every freaking year.
No, I can't be man. Me. That can't be me. Nope, it can't be me.
I'm going to put my hand up and just say I am the worst. Like, I'm so bad at this.
Well, I mean, like, how bad? Like, okay, like, what's your list? Not to break from the, I mean, a little bit of a hockey break in the middle as we discuss Christmas here, but, like, what's your list looking like?
I'm not good at, I don't have great ideas. I'm really good at just doing what I got to do work-wise sometimes and, like, compartmentalizing that. And yeah, I'm not good at getting ahead on the gift buying. Like, I remember a couple of years ago, the Leafs played in Arizona on December 23rd, a game against the Coyotes. And I literally went between the morning skate and the game across the street. And there's an outlet mall there, which is actually great. And I just bought all my gifts in one go on December 23rd between the morning skate and the game. And then I even went to the airport and they had a gift wrapping service on December 24th and got a gift wrapped.
Oh, that's actually pretty convenient and a bit fortunate, but also pretty convenient that happened. I'm a guy. I need a list. I need to. Maybe this is a bit cheap, but I'm really big on people telling me like tell me what you want. Tell me what you want.
I don't do it like, that way.
Nah, I'm big on being like, okay, like I've had people tell me, okay, what do you want for Christmas? I'm like, okay, I want this. Or whatever. Like, I'm big on just tell me what you want, because I don't want to be in a situation where I get you something that, you know, it may be thoughtful, but you don't really want it. Like, you're just kind of like, whatever. Like, I'm big on just be like, tell me what you want. I'll try to get it for you. Even if it's something that you just like need, it could easily just be like, okay, you want socks? Let me get you some socks. Let me get you some cool, funky socks. Like,
I'm big on going to the liquor store and buying alcohol for everyone above a certain age, calling that a gift.
Okay. I mean, I don't know. I don't think we were planning on getting each other Christmas gifts, but if we get comfortable enough with our friendship a couple years down the line, let me know what alcohol you want.
Yeah, don't add one more stressful thing to me, Julian. It's not that I don't want to spend money on you. I get so stressed by the gift part.
Yeah, me too. I got a lot of love for you, CJ, but I think we'll hold off whatever alky for next year. Anyway, I hope everyone appreciated the Christmas break in between all of the hockey stuff.
Right? Well, everyone's thinking this.
Of course. course. Yeah, it's not inconvenient to think about Christmas. Some people listening to this podcast right now have been listening to Christmas music since November 1st. So what is it?
I would do that. I haven't been, but I love it that much. That's the flip side of this. The gift part stresses me out, but the season, like, I love the holiday.
I mean, I love the holiday too. I just think my thing about it is weird. This is the last thing I'll say about Christmas. I always find it weird that from November 1st to like December 25th, everyone's going in on Christmas. And then December 26th, everyone just kind of drops off. I'm the opposite. I'm like, November, it's not Christmas yet. December 25th to like January 3rd or 4th, I'm in Christmas mode. That's how my family's done it. I just find it weird that like after Christmas is done, everybody drops off.
We're all just immediately over it.
Yeah, it's because you tired yourself out for the whole month before. Like, pace yourselves. Okay, let's go to let's talk about Anton Udobin. And I understand as we're recording this right now, we are hours away from the waiver list being put out. For those who are not in the loop, Anton Udobin, the Dallas Stars goaltender, placed on waivers on Monday, not having a great start to his year. 3-3-1 record in 7 games. Save percentage below 900. We're not too far off from him being the Dallas Stars goalie of choice during the 2020 Stanley Cup final against the Tampa Bay Lightning. And now he's in a position where we don't know if he's going to just go to the AHL, play for the Texas Stars, or if some other team is going to pick him up. So it is possible someone picks him up by the time you hear this podcast. But I think the Stars were trying to shop him before it got to a point where they're going to put him on waivers.
Absolutely, they were. I mean, he's their third goaltender right now. And, you know, remember, he wasn't really their goalie of choice in the playoffs in 2020. He was their goalie of convenience.
Right.
Just because Ben Bishop got injured. And unfortunately, Ben Bishop's career has just actually now come to an end because of some knee issues he had. He made a really valiant effort to try to rehab and come back. He even made a conditioning start in Texas and just isn't able to continue his career. And so, you know, former Vezina winner Ben Bishop is out of the mix, and still Anton Udobin is the third goaltender in Dallas. And, you know, they have cap to manage. They have a roster situation right now, some injuries and illnesses. And so that's why the waiver period comes now. This is going to be dated, but I'll tell you, as of what, we're 5.5 hours taping this from when waivers clears, I'd be surprised if someone claimed him straight up. He's got another year in his deal at $3.3 million on the cap and even more in cash. But I do think once he clears waivers, you may see another team potentially trade for him, because that would be a way to either send a contract back to Dallas to offset the money or maybe have the Stars eat some of that salary. It would also allow the team that acquires him to immediately assign him to the AHL, you know, get him playing there, you know, as an asset, and potentially bring him back up, you know, if they can get his game back under him. And so I think everything's on the table. You know, even if a trade doesn't materialize right away, I would expect he'll go to Texas and, you know, play games. I mean, it's the toughest thing when you have as many goaltenders as the Stars do. You know, there's almost no way to keep them all happy or keep them all getting the right amount of shots. Even at practice, it's hard to run a practice with three goalies because you only have two nets and drills are designed a certain way. And so, you know, I think getting the reps in is first and foremost what needs to happen. And look, goaltenders are voodoo. That's just the what I see on Twitter all the time, right? I mean, guys have crazy runs and they go the other way. You know, I'm not making any predictions here. I'm not saying Anton Hudobin's career is over by any stretch, but he's getting older. And so I think you'll see him get another shot in the NHL at some point. But, you know, it just remains to be seen whether that'll be in Dallas or somewhere else.
Yeah. Also, I'll add to, I did say Anton Udobin was the goalie of choice. It's basically like kind of opening up your fridge and realize you only really have one thing to eat. So you might as well go eat that.
So ketchup is your dinner on toast.
I hope you've never been in a situation where you've had to have ketchup. Okay.
I was just imagining having like only one condiment available and what it might be.
Yeah. Jeez. I was about to be like, look, I know you've glowed up in the last how many years, CJ. I hope your lows were not you putting ketchup on toast, my brother. Like, jeez.
No. It never got quite that bad.
Jesus. The last piece of news I wanted to get to before we get to Ask CJ pertains to, I guess it's more of an Olympic check, I guess. You kind of sent Twitter ablaze with your tweet before the weekend about the fact that some new provisions from the IOC came down. Essentially, it boils down to this. If you are at the Olympic Games, you test positive for COVID. First, you need to prove two negative tests within 24 hours. And if you are in quarantine, it could be up to about 5 weeks. That's just not ideal. And it started this whole debate about, oh, our players, should they be going? Is the NHL going to pull out? If you're a media member, would you consider going under those circumstances? I think I've said even on this show, no. Yeah. So what are your thoughts on the way the Olympics are looking right now?
For the record, I would still go. I'm not going, as it turns out, because my employer doesn't want to send me there, which is totally fine. I understand that this isn't a complaint, but I would absolutely go still. Just because if you go to the Olympics to sell popcorn, I'm telling you, you can't help but reflect on where you came from, who did good to you in your life that allowed you to get there. I mean, going to the Olympics, I would never pass up on that opportunity. You could stage one on Mars and I would agree to it. I know this isn't the point of the talk, but
that's actually a really cool insight, actually.
Do you know what? It does come back to, though, why I think it matters still so much to players, and why, as much as that bit of news I shared on the weekend and some of the discussion that's come out of it since, you know, I still don't think it's a foregone conclusion the guys are out. You know, it's sort of pointing more in that direction. But from what I've heard is behind the scenes, like Sidney Crosby in particular, among the Canadian guys, is really pushing to go. Like, I think he understands this is possibly his last time to go. You know, I'm not retiring him by 2026. It's not impossible. And it's my view, if he's just in the league still, even if he's not the best player in the league, that you're taking him on Team Canada. So if he's still playing 4 years from now, maybe he would get another chance. But, you know, let's face it, we're in the point where it's not a foregone conclusion he'll be playing in the NHL 4 years from now. And so, you know, with someone like him pushing hard and trying to ease everyone's concerns and get answers, you know, and a lot of people at Hockey Canada, the Canadian Olympic Committee, the NHLPA doing the same thing. It's not a total non-starter these guys are going, but it's certainly more jeopardy than it's ever been, because we're getting to the point where players have to make this decision, right? And let's look around, man. Like this, I'm no epidemiologist, although I've played one on a podcast for the last 20 months, every time I've appeared on one. But you know, this Omicron variant is clearly sending caseloads through the roof in Europe. We're starting to see it here in Toronto, where I live, and in North America. And even people that are vaccinated are testing positive. And so if you got to go to China, even if you're double vaxxed and probably boosted, which I'm sure a lot of the players will be by the time February comes around, there's still a chance you produce a positive test way there, even if it's an Olympic bubble. And if this quarantine issue isn't in some way, shape, or form changed or clarified, I know there'd be a lot of a cost associated, for example, with taking someone out by air ambulance. But I think that's what it's going to take to get a bunch of the NHL players willing to go. I think it's that simple. I can't imagine them agreeing to potentially being 3 to 5 weeks in quarantine. And the good news is this is still a bit of an open conversation. Like, what I reported isn't the final answer. That's just what the latest intel that was shared to the NHL and the NHLPA from the IOC was. And so let's see where this goes. It's not dead on arrival, but I mean, look, it's a risky time. It's a difficult time. There's not necessarily one right answer here. You know, I think that's, and everyone's going to have to make their own choice, right? Like, Robin Leonard's already pulled out for Team Sweden. I've heard of a few players that are Team Canada wide that would be on the team that are thinking about doing the same. Maybe we don't get a complete, absolute best-on-best tournament, but something very close to it. And this is going to continue to dominate discussion. Like, we're going to probably talk about this to some degree every pod, because everything's moving. And so in terms of what's happened these last 24 hours, my understanding is calls have started with the NHLPA, with players. I think one thing the union wants to get a handle on, first of all, they're trying to get a handle on exactly 100% what are the quarantine rules, where facilities would be there. Is there any chance someone could be taken out who's, you know, positive? You know, they're trying to get all that. Like, what would the medical care look like? You know, they want to obviously protect the athletes' interests. And so they're trying to get those answers. And they're also internally trying to figure out, okay, how many guys really are thinking about not going? You know, because right now you might have some doubt, but you're on the fence still. You want to see how things play out over the next few weeks. just in terms of the spread of the virus. And so this is a very fluid situation. There's a lot of focus on it internally too, like not just from the media. And, you know, if I had to guess right now, I'd say we're not going to see this tournament, but I'm not saying that with like a lot of passion. Like I'm saying, it's like 45-65 likely to happen. Like it's slightly less than 50-50. And, you know, a lot's going to depend on these next few weeks. And look, we've seen Calgary now have to delay games. I mean, now we're getting back to that scenario, perhaps with the NHL schedule. So there's a lot of dynamics that are affecting this set of decisions and kind of where we're at with the Olympics.
So, and this is the last question I'll ask about the Olympics before we get to Ask CJ. Let's say the NHL says, okay, we're not sending our players to the Olympics. What happens to that massive break in February, which was supposed to be allotted for, you know, Olympic play, essentially?
The truth is it'll probably likely remain a massive break. You know, maybe a couple of these games, say, that have need to be rescheduled, that Ottawa, the Islanders, and now the Flames have had, get played then. But it seems as though most teams haven't left that full break, or, you know, in their arenas unbooked, which you can't blame them. They're trying to make money, right? So they're booking concerts and other events, or NBA games, or what have you. And so I don't think that you're going to see a ton of games played during then. There might be a few, as I say, but I don't think it's going to reorder the whole schedule. I think essentially it becomes a break in a season. Man, I mean, we live in weird times. Like there's normal left the coop, you know, in March 2020. Like we've seen NHL games played in August. We saw the Stanley Cup handed out in September. We might now see a 3-week break in February in the schedule, where literally there'll be an All-Star game and then almost nothing, maybe a handful of games before the end of February. I mean, this is just where we're at. And everyone's making the best decisions they can with the information available. And it keeps changing, you know, almost by the day.
Yep. And you do have a point. It's probably likely up until the NHL officially says yes or no, we're probably going to have to do these periodic Olympic checks. Well, that's just what we're going to have to do.
Until they either 100% pull out or the planes are on the runway about to take off, the charters with all the NHL staff and the players, like, we won't have finality one way or the other until we get an absolute no, or until those planes are on the way. Because, you know, we've talked about this January 10th deadline a lot. That's just a deadline when there's no financial penalties. That doesn't mean the league might not still want to go and end up having to pull out January 28th and incur some costs associated with that. You know, that wouldn't be ideal for anyone. It would be very difficult, of course, to still have a men's Olympic tournament. You know, how do you get the Team Canada be mobilized if it's that late of a switch? But, you know, that's still a possible outcome here. And so, you know, I actually like talking about it. I'm interested in the issues and the dynamics. I think it's a really difficult decision for the players, because, as I mentioned, I would still personally go, even just to write stories about it and to be part of it, because I've so enjoyed my two Olympic experiences. Like, I'm dying to go back to another Olympics. You know, I'm at peace with the decision that I'm part of here, because it's a tough time, and you know, the company's probably got to worry about costs. What happens if I get stuck there? Maybe they got to pay 5 weeks of costs. You know, like, it's not just about my health. There's just a lot of things associated with it. But hopefully by 2026, the world's a little bit more sorted out, and we have a 100% guaranteed Olympic men's tournament, best on best, with NHL players. And I'll be sitting somewhere there with you. We'll be taping a pod on off days, and we'll both be doing our jobs. And, you know, let's manifest that stuff, man, because I can't wait to get back to an Olympic tournament one day.
Thank you for taking the words out of my mouth, because that is my hope for 2026, that I will be at an Olympics too. Hopefully by 2024, I get to be at an Olympics, but 2026, like, by then, if I'm not at going to the Olympics, like, something's up. Like, I'm going to be pretty, that's a goal I've set for myself. So yeah, 2026 will definitely be shared.
Don't be too rigid though. Like, goals are good. I'm all about goal setting, but if it doesn't happen, then the one lesson I have is that you have more time than you think sometimes.
Man, I'm telling you, man, we need that segment. Let's get to another segment though. Ask CJ. Let's get to, I've got some fun questions. I've got some other, you know, not to say they're not so fun, just more like, hey, why is this happening the way that it is? Let's go to this fun one first from Quinn on Twitter.
Hey, Quinn.
Sign one, trade one, wave one. Auston Matthews, Connor McDavid, Nathan MacKinnon.
Sign one, trade one, wave one. Ooh.
This is very tough.
Well, you signed the best player.
Well, yeah.
So Connor McDavid gets signed. You trade the player that's going to bring you back the most assets that isn't the best player. I guess that that would be the argument. So I guess I'm trading Austin Matthews because he's a couple years younger than McKinnon and signed another year longer. And so I think that he's bringing you more back in that trade. And then I guess I'm waiving Nathan McKinnon, but I'm getting fired for that decision.
But isn't Nathan McKinnon on a cheaper contract? Could you make the argument that maybe a team might be able to take might be a little bit more palatable?
His next contract might start with a 1 and a 5. That's true. It depends how you view that. I'm just saying Austin Matthews is younger and more cost controlled for the time being. I'm not necessarily even commenting that he's better than Nathan McKinnon. I think there's an argument there that he's better, but it's not a slam dunk. I stand by my answer, but I don't feel a lot of conviction about, like, I mean, come on,
it's hard.
This is insane.
I think this is one of the most insane questions we've ever come across on Ask CJ. One of the most insane.
I'm signing McDavid to a lifetime contract at whatever number he wants.
Yeah. Like 97 million. Maybe that's selling him short.
I mean, the one flaw in my logic is Austin's next contract might start with a 1.5 as well. So, him and McKinnon might be resetting the bar because they're both coming up here in the next couple of years, and they are two of the best 3 or 4 or 5 players in the league.
Next question from Walter Pellegrini on Twitter. CJ, what are your thoughts on the New York Rangers? Very quietly, they are 18-5. I didn't check to see if that record is still accurate. I think he said that either on the Monday or the Tuesday. It doesn't matter. What are some rumors you are hearing? Where is Kraftsoff going? Will the Rangers trade for a top 6? This guy just is like a Rangers fan who just wants to know what's the latest on his team.
Well, they look really good. I mean, what a blessing to have Henrik Lundqvist as long as he did, and then to immediately find Shesterkin to essentially take the reins from him. Not to say their success is completely driven by goaltending. They got lots of good players too. It's definitely a priority for that team to add, you know, another top 9 type of forward, maybe top 6. We'll see how that goes towards the trade deadline. Like, I don't really have names for you yet. You know, I know that JT Miller's name, for example, has been out there. I know he was a former Ranger, but, you know, I'm not convinced Vancouver's trading him yet. I mean, they started winning games, right? And so we'll see how things sort of develop there. But I would certainly expect that, you know, we'll see the Rangers make that type of addition to their lineup to try to just bring a little more balance to their scoring lines. And, you know, I think they're probably out punching their true weight class right now a little bit. Like, I think that there's maybe due for like a little bit of regression after the start, but, you know, they're on the right track here. And organizationally, you know, it's hard to find much fault. They've got good young players. The Kraftsoff situation will be tough. Like, he's a distressed asset right now, even though he's a high draft pick and a player I think teams respect his skill and are intrigued by. I don't see anyone, obviously, but we haven't seen a trade materialize in 6 weeks or so since he made a trade request. Like, no one's beaten down the door to get him. And so I could see him, you know, he's playing in Russia now. I think the urgency to make that move probably doesn't arrive until next offseason. So, you know, maybe he's the trade piece that they use to add a forward before the deadline. But I think more than likely you see him move next summer around the draft, something like that.
From Sterling Cooper Draper Price on Reddit, how much did Chris hate being presented with his SDPN jersey when he joined the network, since he's an, quote, an adult?
Wow, good question. I loved it, actually. I friggin' loved it. That was such an exciting night. Like, you know, we talked about doing this pod for so long, Julian, and there's some days in there where I thought it was never going to happen. And then it was so surreal to actually be driving to Adam's house that night to announce this pod, and that's when they presented me the jersey. And so even though I am, quote, an adult, I will make exceptions, because that's the thing about being adult. Occasionally you're a hypocrite. And so I'm a hypocrite on this one. And I love my SDPN jersey. It's one of like 3 jerseys in my closet right now.
What are the other two?
I have a Wayne Gretzky old school Oilers jersey that I got as a gift as a kid, and I still just love it. Like, I don't really wear it, but I've certainly held on to it. And then I have my Tony Romo jersey in there too. Love Tony. Go Cowboys.
Last question for you. On the Steve Dangle podcast, this is from Congo Red on Reddit as well. On the Steve Dangle podcast, Frankie Corrado answered what his favorite perk of being a Toronto Maple Leaf was. For you two, what was the most interesting in-arena media benefit? Popcorn machine, open tap from the beer sponsor, no charging ports in the press box?
So I'll tell you this. There's only two arenas off the top of my head. This is pre-COVID. This might have changed even since COVID. But Dallas and Calgary are the only two arenas, I believe, that serve beer after a game. Which is kind of cool. And I'm sorry if I forgot someone else, because I haven't been traveling the way I used to. And so I might have left someone else out. But in Dallas, they put a little buck. They used to put a little bucket up in the press box with just like a couple beers. And in Calgary, you could actually sit in the media room. And usually what was cool there, actually, the local media would usually sit and just like have a beer. Like, it wasn't like a party, but like once everyone filed their story, they all just sort of sat and had a beer and chatted. And I thought I kind of liked that collegial feeling of that. So that those were big perks. And always, you know, I didn't miss my opportunity when I was in those arenas working. Lots of places have good food. Some have some crappy food. Detroit's new arena, actually, Little Caesars Arena, had like a killer, and I mean killer, pregame meal. And it was like $5 American too. And they had like everything. Like, it was insane. It wasn't like one option. It was like 17 options, including an ice cream machine. So just off the top of my head, those are some of the perks. You know, sometimes they give us some pizza at Scotiabank Arena in Toronto, where I cover most of my games.
There's the sponsorship.
And I love pizza. So that's a pretty big perk. But, you know, honestly, if we're being honest, like what's a better perk than getting to go to the games for free? Like, someone's paying you to be there. You get to be in, you know, so many times I'm sitting around going like, I'm in the Stanley Cup final in whatever city, like, how the hell did this happen? And so the job itself is a giant perk, if I'm being honest. But those are some of the ones that jump out to me. I mean, the hot dogs in Montreal are kind of famous at the intermission. I don't know if those are still going on. You can tell us, but.
Oh, yeah, they are. Oh, for sure they are. And the funniest is seeing like. Yeah, the Shane Show. And the funniest is seeing like players come up, like scratches and whatever, come up during the intermission to get some. Yeah, they're definitely still a thing.
Boston has a killer. I'm not a big candy person, but they have like a crazy candy spread at the intermission. I avoid it, but like I see my colleagues basically tripping over each other trying to get in on some Reese's Pieces or whatever.
Oh my God. The Bell Center beyond the hot dogs, like, I don't think there's anything particularly quirky. However, since the question did specifically mention a popcorn machine, Percival Molson Stadium has like a little like popcorn cart where they have like a bunch of popcorn in a cart and you can like scoop up whenever. That's like, and I think they make it like in the booth too. So I guess that's the closest thing I could think of for that. But
do you know yeah. Who's also been excellent in my experience? Nashville always gives good media gifts. Like, they gave these awesome t-shirts out during the Cup final. Like, I can't even explain them. But they're like, it was like the kind of giveaway t-shirt you would actually wear. And I do occasionally still wear it. Yeah, I still wear it occasionally. Yeah, because I told a story about it. I think I told it on the pod where I wore it one day because I was like at the end of my laundry and I literally bumped into PK Subban on the street in Toronto and was playing on the team at the time. And I was like, oh my God, what are the odds? Like, the one time I wear this t-shirt, I see a guy on the team. I'm not sure if he saw me. I just saw him. But I also remember they gave out shots, like little bottles of alcohol.
Oh, no,
actual alcohol.
Oh,
like for after the game or whatever. I don't know. Like, it's just funny. Like, they're very thoughtful there. Like, they kind of go outside the box. And I mean, I'm not making our job sound too good here. There's perks everywhere we go is basically what I'm saying. And it, like, the long and short of it is like the places where there aren't perks are notable because everywhere else has perks.
We're basically spoiled. I mean, you in particular are, because I'm still not in a position where I've been able to travel to any arena that's not the Bell Center yet. But that might happen 2022. I'm putting that out in the universe. Unless there's anything else we need to add, I think that's going to do it for this rare Tuesday edition of the Chris Johnston Show. Buddy, we made it through a Tuesday.
We that did. And get shopping for your Christmas presents, everyone. I know that was everyone's favorite segment of today's show.
I imagine it was. Join us on the SDPN Discord. Go to the SDPN website. You can find the logo where you can click through to that. It's a great time, I promise. Subscribe to the SDPN YouTube page for more clips from our show, the Steve Dangle podcast. I hear there's a really big Agent Provocateur episode dropping today. We'll see how big that is. Apparently, the guest has been in the same room as the Muppets. That's the only clue I've been able to decipher from the Monday edition of the Steve Dangle podcast, which you can also find on the SDPN YouTube page. And subscribe to the podcast wherever you listen to podcasts. And we'll be back on Thursday with a brand new episode. For CJ, I'm Julian, saying so long and peace.
Peace, bro.
The Chris Johnston Show. Inside the game, twice a week. Follow Chris on Twitter, @ReporterChris. And follow Julian McKenzie, @JKMcKenzie.